On listening, five thoughts. 1. Our bodies are tuned for sound. Our cells can vibrate from the impact of sound waves of all and any frequency. A baby in the womb hears its first sounds at 18 weeks of the mother's pregnancy. By 24 weeks, when the embryonic ears are undergoing rapid development, the soundscape is widened and ever more sensitive. It is the sounds of the mother's body, her heartbeat, her breathing lungs, growling stomach, as she offers her as yet unborn the radical hospitality it requires. This is what M. Norbezi Philip calls the carrying of a baby in the maternal womb. Sounds from the outside are muted but audible, part of the fetal soundscape, muffled but reverberating through the amniotic fluid. And we know how water, liquid, carries sound. Just think of the ocean and its sonic mysteries. By the third trimester, the baby hears the mother's voice and recognizes it, listens to it. And as baby does so, baby's own heart rate will quicken in response to its hearing, on alert for she who offers the hospitality of life. 2. It is with our eyes that we listened, registering the weight of the footfall in the uncarpeted hallway, deciphering the mood of the owner of the feet, seeing the menace of the opening door and the stance of his body as he stood still and she very slightly flinched, turning her back toward the sink and kitchen window. Catching the meaning of the continuously opened and curled fingers, the shape of the thumb bending at the side of his hand, and hinting at a slight curl around the first and second fingers, like a boxer's. Our eyes heard the tightening of his biceps and stiffening of his shoulders and the tendons in his neck. We waited to hear if these bodily sounds got louder and what we could do if they did. We watched how she acted and noticed the dissonance between the forced lightness of her tone as she asked if he wanted tea, and the muscles set in readiness for cowering. Our eyes were acutely attuned listening organs, and we knew when to run. 3. Bodies talk, loudly at times. They need to be listened to. Not just our own, like when they tell us we need rest or pleasure or to eat or run or swim or embrace, but the bodies of others too. Sometimes we need to really listen to the bodies of others. Walking on a narrow pavement on the underpass section of Beach Street, me slightly ahead, behind me two Asian women chatting away. I sense that they are shorter than me, but don't know why I get that feeling, yet somehow sense it's how the sounds of their voices hit my ears. The vibrations of their voices seem to contact me at shoulder blade height and then do a 90-degree movement upward toward my ears. Who knows, and what does it matter? Only to paint an image in my mind of three women walking along, one tall black woman and two brown women, ambling along toward the crossroads at the end of the underpass. Toward us, on this narrow pavement, are coming two white women, and behind them two white men, all in conversation. They occupy the whole of the pavement and continue talking with their mouths to each other and their bodies to us. The narrow pavement requires that we all navigate some space, make room for one another. The bodies of the white women shout very loudly that we have not been seen, or seen and not seen, like a bodily language of disavowal, knowing and not knowing we are there. Not seen as spoken by her body posture that shows no tiny movement of turning slightly aside as we have done so that we might all pass. No outstretched arm with open palm as if to gesture, please, after you. No communication of shared space. No silent announcement that she has felt the energy of our bodies in motion. As if she is encased in silence. Entombed in her own personal anechoic chamber of silence, like the one at Harvard, foreclosing on her capacity to receive the energy presence of the other women approaching, as if we did not exist, did not generate or be generated by our human energy forces. Our energy denied, disavowed, in the refusal to listen to the frequencies of lively presence of black and brown bodies, her anechoic chamber of white femininity making declaration of white entitlement and privilege through the loud shouting of bodily spread and occupation of narrow public space, speaking loudly, listening not at all, closing white ears. But as service reminds listeners, there is no place entirely free of energy, and in that non-silence there's a world to be discovered. A world of white supremacy's quotidian violences of erasure, too hard for you to face. Black and brown bodies and worlds too full of life, generative frequencies for your energy to allow you to listen. We hear you. 4. Voicing, listening, hearing. Sonia spoke this chain, and it sparked a multi-tracked associative trail. It positioned silencing. It positions listening in a sequence or an ensemble, and in that brings both the question of positionality and that of difference to the table. Can we listen from the table? From what stance or position? Can I, as listener, catch it all? And which me is doing the catching? I think of an orchestra. Haha, I keep miskeying on the keyboard and writing orchestra after the master Sun Ra, moving away from the association of orchestra with the European canon, despite listening to Bach's B minor mass as I write, and toward the Afrofuturism of the celestial being that is Sun Ra, as, he says, are all black beings. But I think of an orchestra and how each player conjures energy to make sound for listening, but each from their specific position instrument, communing into one large soundscape. Can I hear all of these knowingly and decipher their specificity? A trained ear is needed. Yet the combined mood affect generated impacts me as listener, and I feel as well as hear the sonic gift and listen from that me or those me's that can hear all. The multiple voicings address and are responded to by the multiple organs of sonic reception and hearing that a body carries. And remember, this body is a person. This body is a person. This body is a person. Morgan Parker voices this. We must remember. We must hear it. How can we listen to all this? To repeat, we need all our organs of sonic reception for such listening. Ear listening, history experience listening, heart listening, vision listening, noise listening, muscle listening, imagination listening. Multiple registers of sonic reception enabling the potential travel between voicing, listening, hearing. A palimpsest of listening, hearing the top note, the tone, the overnote, the semitone, catching the underneath note, maybe unconscious, resounded in the echo of a feeling, the fleeting half-image as if a fragment of a dream and delivered in the gap between notes that isn't silence but mistakenly hears like it is. A palimpsest of listening involves listening for the explicit and the traces, involves following the trail of traces, haunting or ancestral. And that palimpsestic layering opens a space capacious enough to take in and value difference. A listening that is from the multiple me's reaching toward conversation with the multiple you's. A palimpsestic space that embraces and fosters difference in the way that Audrey conceived it as the interdependence of mutual non-dominant differences that is the ground for true and sustainable coalition and solidarity. For recognition without the requirement for death by assimilation or hierarchy of voice, without the enforced silencing of voices of those categories of being deemed lower or not even humans, produced by the logics of modernity's racial capitalism and the class positions and normative bodies as genders as able that it inscribes, that voices and listens to and hears specificity of position in gesture of chorus and communion as the generative life-giving force that is non-dominant difference. 5. I fantasize that an artist like Sonia or Simone, listens for light and shade, that the hearing they feel is the way that wavelengths get fractured or refractured when they are broken up and dispersed according to the longer and shorter wavelengths, according to the red and green-blue wavelengths, that theirs is an optical as well as sonic listening, that their hearing is for movement around an object as much as it is for noticing of movement through or off an object, the way the listening for degrees of light might tell us something about the limitations of transparency and the possibilities of opacity and act as a critique of neoliberal constructions of the atomized self, might tell us that in this listening there is a pathway away from the modes of categorical capture that modernity, in all its guises, including the neoliberal, effects as it forces us to name and reveal ourselves in the categories of personhood it has on offer, and toward new relations that Glissant's right to opacity offers. The invitation to venture toward the yet to be discovered in the opacity of my and your and their being. The sonic disturbance and visual uncertainty of Sonia and Ayn's O Adelaide that disrupts any assumption that we know the black female body in general and that of Adelaide Hall in particular, or would even want to settle with the ambiguous Adelaide they enable us to listen to and hear. It's as if the invitation is to sign up to a commitment to an ongoing investment in the onward process of becoming, on and on and on. There is a learning in this, if it can be heard, a learning that maybe can help expand the modes of psychoanalytic listening that Salman Akhtar says comprises two modes of listening that might be differentiated with a hard border, or might not. Better not, I think, as the drownings in the Mediterranean Sea and Channel La Manche are hard evidence of the murderous consequences of hard borders. Hard borders cannot be in the service of life. I think he thinks not too, even while identifying the differences between analytic listening with its evenly suspended attention and its listening to conscious and unconscious voicings or tellings, and ordinary listening with its intentionality and conscious orientated focus. For, Akhtar says, psychoanalytic listening appears to be a fluid combination of spontaneity and deliberateness, with variable attention toward conscious and unconscious communications. I sense that in combination, Sonia and Ayn and Akhtar tell us something about listening being a practice of noticing and responding, maybe in voice, maybe in some other mode, to multiple frequencies at once. The vibrations of presence and plea in a variety of registers of address, and I think in the service of iterative becoming in opacity. Becoming into fullness but never doneness, an onward journey of new relational modes. In the same volume that Akhtar edited, Evelyn Albrecht Schwaber, also a psychoanalyst, quotes a US white male writer called M.R. Montgomery, about whom I know nothing, but he offers a gift when he writes, in relation to his father, "The child crying, 'Watch me,' is not begging for attention. He is pleading for existence itself." The Winnicottian echo seems loud here, but it is deep nevertheless. Hear me. Hear me, and hear me in my, our non-dominant difference, might make the same plea. A plea and a claim and a doing anyway that resounds off the walls and vibrates in the many bodily hearing organs, and that insists No one needs step off the pavement, no matter how narrow, if this can be heard and the hearing can be borne. Or more, the bearing of the hearing might even lead toward the collective reconceiving of what a pavement or pathway might look and sound like. And the sounding might be, come, let us start building.